Hey, how's it going? This is Independent Librarian Dynamics, Sean Kennedy the Sixth. Episode number 732.653.663.398.36.8. This is yet another pirate radio broadcast coming to you at Queen's English from sometime after now. By listening to this, you should be advised that you are, in fact, violating your listener's license agreement. And you could be subject to suspension of your listener's license. You should disconnect now if you think you're going to lose your job or get kicked out of the arcologies. But if you're inside one of the arcologies, or even better, if you're someone before the arcologies existed, you need to listen this more than anyone. So sit back and relax, and light your candles, and the server will protect us all. Still no sign of Carcass. I don't think he's coming back. Of course, I keep saying that because I guess I hope he does. I should be humping along right now, but I got a few hours before daylight breaks. I'm going to try to tunnel in some of this wreckage here, see if I can catch some sleep. Moving mostly at night, as per usual. Right now I'm in what looks like a burned out rocket rig that's been scattered liberally along the side of the Autobahn. Got my little campfire going and I'm shielded from all sides, so I don't think any road killers would see me, but we'll see how it goes. Gonna have to backtrack a little bit, I guess. See, all the megas, as the megas were being created, after the smaller cities started to fall by the wayside and the dead were piling up, megas still needed to have business. Money still needed to be made. So they needed to have commerce, trade. And the arcologies were set to be self-sustaining. They were supposed to just, you know, be this self-contained unit. But even still, with a company, you have to be able to ship. You have to get product from one location to another. And as the world burned, this became more and more difficult. Desperate people will do what it takes to get what they need. Shipping food is almost impossible. I mean, the waste tech trying to ship surplus scrap from one city to another in order to avoid, well, waste is... They needed a way to do that. Now, normally, what used to be done was they'd use either... Well, a lot of the time they'd use air because of how fast it was. In the old days, they used to be able to take planes every day and arrive within a few hours. But as the Great Agent War raged and all the protests and terrorist groups moved on and up and in, aircraft were just a giant weapon. Oh, sure. They tried to institute security measures, but there's not much that can stand up to people who really care about what they're doing. I mean, if they don't care if they die, they can take an aircraft down. It got so bad with these giant missiles falling out of the sky called planes that it became almost a 50-50 chance whether or not if you were on the plane or if your product was on the plane, you know, it could even reach its destination. They didn't really care so much about the lives. I mean, sure, they screamed about the tragedy, but the flights where 10 people were lost were really screamed about because there was, you know, a couple million dollars worth of product on these planes that was going to waste. People could be replaced. There's all kinds of people. It's a joke inside the arcologies. Hey, maybe we should buy him a ticket somewhere. That way, if he dies, you know, everyone gets promoted and things move on. So the corporations stopped using the planes for transport. The next bet, of course, for mass amounts of freight was, well, trains. Trains you could load right up. Problem there is that a train, although can pull a lot, runs on a very limited route. All you have to do is dig up some railroad tracks and derail one train, and, well, you've taken out the train and killed everyone on board all in one fell swoop. You and the rest of your raiding party can take your time, pick through the cars at your leisure. Veritable cornucopia. Trains were the flavor of the month for about, well, 6 months. Then they realized that wasn't going to work either. Desperate people will find a way, you can bank on that. Of course, there's always water. I'm trying to ship things via massive tanker truck, which is great if you have commerce with other countries, but when all of the countries are at war with you and pirates on the open sea are at a level unprecedented at any time in history. I mean, it was so bad that a lot of these ships, they would sail from port and they would just fire on any other boat they saw, because every other boat they saw, 9 times out of 10, was a pirate vessel. They tried everything. They'd sent distress signals, and when the ships got close, they got raided, and it was brutal. I mean, shipping across the sea, it's done by boat now, but I mean, that's a whole other story. The pirate vessels and trying to deal with that. We still have no way for our colonies to have commerce with each other. That all changed with the invention of plasteel. One of the first task-specific materials. Task-specific materials were created as a form of copyright. See, people didn't want their materials really recycled, because, well, people were making products from their products, and that's not really good. So plasteel was created. It really only has one use, and it's used as a roadway. It replaced asphalt. It's a plastic steel. Combination as a name would kind of depict, but the thing with plasteel is that it's unbelievably strong once it's cured, but it can't be shaped hardly at all. I mean, it would crumble if you tried to make anything out of it. So all you can really do is make it in a pile and make the top flat, and that's about it. So when plasteel came out, the dream to, well, with no small amount of core political involvement, they created the concept of making the great superhighways, called the Autobahns after the German superhighways. Now, these superhighways are about 500 feet wide and about 30 feet off of the ground, and almost laser level flat. Harder than steel, harder than ice. It's unbelievably hard, this stuff. There's been aircraft crash into them and they hardly even scratch. I mean, this stuff is unreal. Some people make bunkers and they use plasteel over the top, but it's so heavy that you can't support it with a beam. It needs to be constantly supported. You have to have a support mechanism that can handle that kind of weight. So it's almost impractical to use for anything other than simply a roadway. But wow, what a roadway it makes. So the first of the Autobahn was completed when they connected the East Coast to the West Coast with this 500-foot-wide monstrosity. And with all the desperation that occurred, then the whole new market opened up for rocket rigs. You can't stop for gas when you're traveling through the wastelands because, well, you will be attacked and murdered by road killers. Talk about them in a second, but naturally, they had to rearrange and redesign the whole transport concept, so they came up with the concept of rocket rigs. Rocket rigs aren't powered by rockets, like the name suggests, but they are powered by these turbines, these ramjet turbines. They sound like a jet, but they're actually electrical. And they would take these huge, transports, and they're usually about anywhere from 15 to 20, some of the big ones are 25 feet wide. They hook these ramjets all around them in a big cluster. Spin them up using a rad pack. Same things we use to power houses in a lot of the cities. And then hook 5 or 6 freight cars onto the back of it. Each freight car's got about 12 wheels on it, all bulletproof rubber and the rest of it. You just hook it all up with titanium and carbon fiber and spark up the rig, and they scream back and forth on the Autobahn anywhere between 400 and 600 miles an hour. It's kind of an amazing thing, really. I mean, driving a rocket rig would be something to do, but I mean, when you're having to cover that many miles, it's pretty dangerous. A lot of things that can happen, a lot of things that go wrong. You lose control of that rocket rig, there's no one who's going to help you. There's no one who can... Don't worry, there'll be people who show up if you crash, but they're not there to help. So, the only, like, they're a society to themselves, the rocket riggers. I mean, they're all independently owned, family-run organizations. They sign up with different companies, and they live, eat, sleep, and breathe on these rocket rigs. They got gunners on them and weapons and whatnot. But, I mean, quite often you can't have that. Sometimes they have a whole family, like they'll be a rocket rig family. And they all live on the rig, and in case of an attack, the children get on the gun, and the wife will get on another gun, and everybody shoots, and the road killers come for them. That brings us to road killers. Just like you got pirates on the high seas, you got pirates on the highways. Road killers were the first ones, were just desperate people who needed supplies, money, food, whatever. Just trying to survive. It becomes very lucrative very fast when you're attacking transport trucks. So as technology adapted, so did the road killers. Road killers are nothing more than highway pirates. They have huge, marauding bands of vehicles. Bikes that do high speed, nitrous packs. Some run electricity, some use old gas, some use waste gas. Most run on waste gas. Specially selected high performance parts to help them do their job. Every road killer crew has a different method of trying to hijack a rocket rig. I mean, sometimes the rig will be barreling down at high speed, and they'll have bikes that can go fast as the rig can. They haul up alongside, grab hold of the sides of the rocket rig, and get up on top, try to gain entry, kill everyone inside. That's dangerous, though, because if you flip the rig, then you lose your front men. But you get the rig. Still, 600 miles an hour, you destroy a lot of your product. This is why... The number one thing they want to do is try to slow it down. They try to slow down the rocket rig. If that rocket rig picks up anything on its radar, it's just going to crank out its speed to the max. I mean, it's pretty hard to get alongside of something doing 550 miles an hour. That's their defense, is their speed. So usually they'll set up a series of barricades and roadblocks and hopes that that'll slow them down. Now, that doesn't really work, of course. Sometimes, like, you won't stop one with a roadblock. A rocket rig will not stop at a roadblock. I mean, these things are, as the threat increased, so did the design and engineering of these things. I mean, they've got a ram prow on the front that can take a head-on collision with another vehicle doing, you know, up to a certain tonnage rating. Just absorbs it and pushes it off to the side, you know. They've even got rocket rigs that'll take a head-on collision with another rocket rig, and it's designed to push the other rocket rig off the side. And that's probably what happened to this one here. It looked older. From the way it's been shredded like this, I'd say it's probably hit another rocket rig, probably head on, and the other rocket rig just pushed it off to the side. Those collisions don't happen often. Not on purpose, anyway. Sometimes pirates will get an older one and send it towards the other rocket rig, and the collision, of course, they don't care about it. They just, you know, Wait for the wreckage to stop smoldering, and then they move in and clean up the loot. The problem here is that either way, you're dealing with a lot of steel and a lot of tonnage moving at high speed. It's a dangerous game. Rocket riggers have a radio net they use. It's like rocket rig radio stations that every rocket rig is hooked up with a repeater. Rebroadcast their signal as they travel. They're in constant chatter and communications like the old CB truckers. So everyone knows where everybody else is, and they have their own sort of traffic control system. They got radar that'll scope up 50, 60, 80, 100, 150 miles in front of them, depending. That way they can get a little bit of warning if you happen to come across something. Some of the big rigs, they can, depending on the unit, I mean, this is all variable. Some rigs don't have radar. I mean, that's pretty dangerous, though. I mean, you'd want to have radar, but the good ones, they get radar units put in there. Some can do 500 miles. Some can even do 1,000 miles out. That's big bucks, though. But they make it. They make it. Everybody in the family's a mechanic. Now, road killers aren't the only one out here. I mean, you've got what they call road rakers as well. Road killers are just pirates. The road rakers are these communities that set up along the highway. The lions, the predators of the highways, these road killers, they would show up, take the prime stuff, and leave the rest to rot. They didn't care. They just showed up, raided, got what they needed and left. Well, there's still a lot of wreckage there. Road rakers are not, they're not bad people. They're just scavengers. You got desperate communities. They sometimes build underground and secret hideaways not too far from these autobahns. There's whole communities living under the desert. Or they'll inhabit an abandoned town. They take their waste cast bikes with makeshift trailers or buggies with makeshift trailers, and they travel up and down the autobahn and along the sides, sifting through all the wreckage, because, of course, no one cleans the wreckage out here. It just gets pushed off to the side and falls down the slope of the autobahn. So people pick through it, and sometimes road killers miss stuff. Sometimes they find some pretty valuable equipment out there. Engine parts, lighting, circuitry, wire. Wire is very valuable. Do a lot with wire. So they scavenge and get what they can. Sometimes they get food. Any wildlife that does exist, I mean, if it gets smacked on the autobahn, you wind up with stew. Scrape whatever's organic off the plastile, and since there's a great lacking of bugs, you can generally bet it hasn't been too badly infected. Worst case scenario, you make waste gas out of it. But if it looks like you can probably eat it and doesn't smell too bad, they'll wind up making a stew. That's what they live on. They're not bad people, they're just people. Doing what they can to survive. They're in just as much a danger as the rocket rigs. I mean, if the road killers find a raker community, they rape, kill, do whatever they like with them. Maybe they'll leave them alone. Chances are they'll raid for whatever valuables they have as well. So the rakers and the road killers, they don't get along very well. A lot of outsiders don't get along with a lot of outsiders very well. Here comes a rig now. Hang on, I'm going to leave the mic on, hunker down, listen to this thing go by. This is something. Listen.
This is DJ Marco, don't get loud and proud on Rocket Rig Radio. And out here we know the truth about what's going on and making sure our product arrives on time and on target. Yes, absolutely. And weather reports say that yet another dust storm is going to be sweeping across the entire central United States. Nothing new there. Wonder why we even issue these reports. We all know what the road looks like. We know what the road looks like better than anyone else. Watch out on the autobahns, because you wouldn't want to hit any of them rakers. But as far as I'm concerned, they're just considered more roadkill. Stay tuned for further updates here on Rocket Radio, where rakers are rocking.
Man, that's quite a vehicle, isn't it? I mean, say what you like about it, but I mean, that's it would be cool to have one of those. even being a librarian, I can appreciate that kind of engineering. I don't think I'd ever want to be a rocket rigger, though. It's too dangerous. Never mind the road killers, but there's lots of other kinds of things you got to worry about. Natural disasters, sandstorms. That's dangerous, too, because you've got to deal with the massive winds that come down. They say sometimes the jet stream comes down, touches. I'll take a rig right off the road. Then, don't forget, you got the soldiers and weird... I mean, anything can happen to you on the autobahns. So, it's kind of taking your life in your hands. You get paid. You get paid pretty well, but that all depends. That reminds me. There's whenever you have a circumstance like this, there's always your heroes. There's a few out here who do what they can to try to help out. One of them is a culotte. Great culotte. She was a bit of a legend. She is a bit of a legend. Still running around out here, but I haven't heard a culotte story in a long time. See, culotte was a... Legend goes that culotte was this Inuit woman. Young girl. She was about 21, 22. And the Inuit are like an Indian people, I guess. They used to live up along the... what's called like the dew line, up where the ice flows used to be before it all melted. I mean, they were fairly cut off from society. They had a fairly natural way of living. They just, you know, hunted their bears and seal and whatnot. They lived like that. The world left them alone. And they left the world alone, but I guess well couldn't leave well enough alone. During the Asian War, there was a series of raids that happened where they moved in on what they thought was American bases. And there was a mix-up. Some of the raids that happened, one of their culottes' village got flashed. You know, flash is a high-speed military raid. They just go and kill everything. They say that she was a mechanic. She was one of these gifted girls who could do just about anything with machines. Intrinsic understanding of how machines worked. I heard all sorts of stories about Native people being able to be in tune with nature and, you know, kind of being able to track and do that sort of thing. But culotte was that way, only with machines, the spirit of machines. Maybe Server touched her too. When her village got flashed, she was working on a car. And before anything else happened, there was eruption of gunfire, people dying everywhere. But the Inuit are no slackers. They knew what it was to be attacked. You don't go walking into a snowbound Inuit village with soldiers and snipers and expect to walk away with no casualties. She was just a kid. All she knew was vehicles, so she just stayed in the grease pit where she was. And power got cut, so she stayed in the dark, and essentially what was a trench. The garage got hit with a rocket, and the whole thing collapsed in. But the car over top she was working on, she was okay. Kind of became her own little bunker. A few hours later, she managed to dig her way out. The village was destroyed. There was nothing left. Every man, woman, and child was killed. And there she was, alone in a village of the dead. 2 hours. Unbelievable. So, the Inuit are survivors, every last one of them. To look at her, you wouldn't think she was anything special. They say she's about 5'6", 5'7", long jet black hair, straight. Looked kind of Chinese. The Inuit have sort of a Mongolian kind of Chinese look to them. Slender. Very muscular. Beautiful, I suppose. Some could say, but... I mean, when you're dealing with that level of spare, beauty seems to be lost. But the Inuit are survivors. Even when the village got flashed, I mean, everything was heating up. Things were changing. They knew that their way of life was terminating, so they were all taking snaps. She did what she could. She found a car, a snow car. That's what they work on up there. They're like, it's like a regular car, but they're hooked up with a kind of tracks so that they can move over across the ice. Very popular. They hooked them up with rad packs. They started selling them. Anyways, she cried for a bit and had to survive. I mean, there's no time for grief. So she began to go through the wreckage and through the dead and try to find what she could use. Outside the perimeter of the town, there was a military sniper that had been killed. I guess they got into a duel with an Inuit. Getting into a long-range duel with an Inuit in the snow with a rifle is a bad idea. But I guess he did, and he lost. Well, I mean, does anyone really win there? But the Inuit had shot him in the head. And since it was an Arctic mission, the soldiers were all wearing enviro suits. The enviro suits are a temperature control suit. It fits very tight to the skin. One size fits all, customizable. Very, very useful based upon sort of height. They say one size fits all, but that means to your musculature and measurements. I mean, you have to small, medium, large, extra large, but just so happens the sniper that got killed was, well, about the same size as she was. So she stripped off his enviro suit to keep herself alive. I mean, that was state-of-the-art equipment. Thousands of dollars for one of these things. She'd never seen one before, but she kind of figured out what it did by looking at it. I mean, they're pretty wild to look at. It looks like hyper-compressed motorcycle armor, only, you know, skin tight with padding and pockets. Pretty wild. And nature she had that made her able to understand machines and the way things worked was the greatest gift that anything could have given her. So she suited up, grabbed all the supplies she could, and headed south. Interesting thing about the Inuit is that they have a layer of fat on their body that no other human on Earth has. They're able to extend extreme temperatures of cold, unbelievable temperatures of cold. But conversely, they can't take the heat very well. So there's not many Inuit left. Most of them are dead. But because Culad had that enviro suit, she can set the temperature at whatever she likes. So she set the temperature nice, and instead of being set especially warm, she said, too, especially cool. Keeps her body that way. Comfortable operating range. They say she drove south for a few weeks and wound up scavenging what she could, coming across what she could. There's lots of military bases that are abandoned, especially in the deserts. I mean, as the as the wars raged and bases became outmanned, they just left all their equipment and walked. Good military tradition. She came across a few. There's one in particular she came across. It was outfitting for Desert Patrol. She got a lot of good equipment there. And that was where she built the Urinamukht. See, Kulat is a legend amongst these people, especially out here on the wastelands. Kulat is like a Robin Hood figure. What she did was she took this type of thing called a Chenwick or a Chenworth. It's a fast attack vehicle, desert patrol thing that had been modified as Mark 15 Chenwith, and modified it heavily. I mean, she had the complete military shop there, so all she did was just spend a couple weeks on the ground and built this vehicle up the way she wanted it. Installed a rad pack for its power and put in a crush cannon. Crush cannons were, that's the perfect weapon for out here, actually. Very, very valuable. I mean, a lot of people, this is all legend, too, you gotta understand. People just say that's where she, they say she got her stuff. I mean, it's the only story I've heard that makes sense. Crush cannon is a type of, it's a machine gun, but the reason why they're called crush cannons is that they're electrical. They use rail magnetics to fire a projectile. But instead of having ammunition, they have a special chamber where you stuff any kind of magnetic metal into, and it crushes it into a shape that can be fired by the weapon. The advantage of this, of course, is you can manufacture your own ammunition. You can imagine how valuable something like that would be out here, and there's all kinds of crush cannons. She mounted a 20mm crush cannon on the top of her Chenwick. That's pretty heavy. That's like a you could take on a tank with that kind of stuff. There's not too many vehicles on the road that could stand up to that kind of firepower. But you don't have the ammo capacity, but you sure have the punch. So in order to compensate, she installed a couple of smaller ones that were what they would call like a. Well, they're smaller bullet size. I don't know what the bullet size was, but it'd be about like a rifle round, like a regular soldier's rifle, but for a machine gun. Anyways, she's got three of these things. She's got the massive cannon on this turret sort of system mounted to the roof, and two other guns facing forwards. And, the whole thing's fed. Electrically powered. She loaded up with everything else too. You could think of scanners, recording equipment, radio gear, everything. She was a hunter, scavenger by nature. Her whole people lived their lives that way. So, with resources like that, didn't take her too long. The vehicle, she wrote in Inuit along the side, and somebody told me what it meant one time. It was Arunamukht, which is an Inuit word. Means it cannot be helped. Like there's, it cannot be helped is sort of the English translation, but it's sort of like a, there's nothing you can do, sort of what the hell, that kind of a thing. I suppose she kind of maintained a fairly dark sense of humor. But that's where Kulak came from, and now she wanders the desert and kicks ass and takes names, pretty much. She doesn't, she's not a road killer, don't get me wrong. If anything, she targets the road killers. She just moves along, scavenger like everybody else, but she's a loner, and, helps people when she can. I know a few people that have talked with her and stuff. I mean, she's not interested in commerce, there's no trade, she just lives as a, you know, a road nomad. I mean, that's what, there's many people like her that do it. Their own private fighters who just do what it takes to survive. Sometimes they'll help people in communities. They have certain Raker communities they know and who know them. They trust each other. So that's what they do. They help one another. There's legends, stories that get thrown around. One of those stories was a story of the Glory Run. Well, that's Glory Run. This was a pretty good story. See, what happened was is that there was a rocket rig with Paneshiba markings that was going along, hauling at a crazy pitch. you know, just moving. And it got targeted by a bunch of, see, the road killers have gangs out here, and one of the larger gangs is called the Marauders. That's probably the largest gang. The Marauders are not a roadkill gang you want to mess with. So anyway, this Panasheba truck is moving at high, high speed. And what the Marauders had done is they'd set up the blocks to slow it down enough. They got a hold of another rig to ram it head on, kind of crash it. So they waited until magic hour when the light was just fading. Vision was pretty bad for everyone all involved, and as the truck came coming, see, the way the Marauders keep track is they have their scanners, and a lot of these rocket rigs, they give out data where they are and whatnot so that other rigs can tell where they are. Yeah, the Marauders can pick them up, but they'd rather keep in touch with other rocket rigs. Sometimes rocket rigs will show up to help another rocket rig. I mean, they won't stop, but they'll just create a wall right across 500 feet of the Autobahn and just plow through everything in their way. That's their convoy. This poor lone Panasheba rocket rig didn't have that good fortune. It's moving along, coming up fast, hit the roadblocks as fast as it could. Smash! Slowed it down. And then when it was slow, it began to waver back and forth, and the Marauder rocket rig was set on automatic, and it had been gathering speed towards it all the whole time. Well, fate would have it, the rocket rig was turned slightly, and the second Marauder rig smashed into it, flipped the truck off the Autobahn, down the embankment. The whole thing came grinding to a halt over 400 or 500 feet. They didn't know. What they didn't know was happening was that Kulat above on the rock ridge was watching everything that was going on. She watched the rig come grinding to a halt, the twisted steel. She watched them pull the Panasheba trucker out of that rocket rig, and she watched him get killed. She had no love for Panasheba. It didn't really matter to her either way. But she knew what she had to do to get the job done. As soon as they dispatched with the rocket rig driver, she sent out another little message. You see, road killers, they can't resist a nice fat convoy, especially one that's close. And she had a pre-recording of a nice fat Panasheba convoy coming from the next city, about 80 miles away on a parallel Autobahn. She broadcast it. They took the bait. They left a minimum crew of road killers behind to mop through the wreckage of the one rig and sent all the rest of their band, some 50 vehicles down there, to go intercept the new convoy. All she had to do was jump inside of her Runamucht, and away she went. So that's what she did. She fired up her rig, and in a matter of seconds, she was heading down towards where that rig, big, massive rocket mess was now lying. There was only about 10 other roadkillers left behind. The Marauders had left only 10 to pick through the remains. Their mistake, not hers. Three of them were on side, and they were dispatched by the 20mm without a problem. The crush cannon just tore them in half, no problem. The other ones, hearing the screams of the dying three in front, roadkillers were never said to be smart, came around for the front. And, well, they just sucked big, fat rounds in the chest as well, making holes large enough that you could throw a child through. Yep. No one ever said that Kulat was a really gentle one, but she could get the job done. She screamed down that mountainside. By the time, of course, they just kept coming out. All the rest of the Marauders, they hear noise and they just keep coming out. She counted 10 behind. All 10 came out. All 10 got shot. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. Way too easy. That's the problem, you see. Ones who got left behind weren't experienced. They were getting the crap jobs. They had to pick through the wreckage and try to find what was valuable. They wouldn't even have to find what's valuable. They just piled it while the rest of the Marauders went off and made a fresh kill. They'd come back, but Marauders are greedy. The convoy rig, the fake the distraction was said to be only about 80 miles away. It wouldn't buy her much time, but enough to do what she needed to get done. So she got down there, cracked open the back, and that's when she heard the noise. This slight, ever so slight, moan. She got inside. There's all manner of parts, equipment, computer equipment, everything happening inside of this rocket rig. I mean, there's five different trailers all connected, all with hallways so you can check your stock. She had a cornucopia available to her. She heard that moan, you see. She moved up further ahead. Lying there, caught up in the webbing, the strapping that was holding all the crates in place, was a young Panasheba girl. She wasn't no rocket rigger's daughter. There's no way. She was had long, straight, blonde, beautiful hair. This was some arcology child, probably well kept. She could see that she had a bracelet on. Child was unconscious, moaning in pain. Looked like she'd broken her leg, probably some internal injuries, but she wasn't dead, far from it. She took a look at the bracelet real quick, and she could see that this child had had no modification done. There was not one single synthetic part in this child. This was pure, virgin flesh. Do you have any idea what a 10-year-old female virgin flesh body gets on the black market? You could have three more rocket rigs filled with goods and nothing there was even close to being as valuable as this child. People would pay big, big money for every single molecule of this child. Her skin was worth money, her hair was worth money, her eyes were worth money, all of her internal organs, her reproductive system was totally unsoiled, her hymen was still intact. This kid was gold. But Kulat wasn't a raider. She wasn't someone who was going to gut-rip this child. She knew what she had to do, and it really sucked. This was a sweet deal. She had five compartments, all of which she could go through and take the queen's pick, but no. She didn't have time to do both. She couldn't help this child and get this unit stripped down. There's no way. So, cursing herself for it, she pulled out her Ulu, curved Inuit blade, and cut the child free of the webbing, dragged her back outside to where she'd get a look at her in the sunlight. The kid was okay. Like she said, kind of bruising. Propped her up against a rock, hoped maybe the sun would heat her up, maybe wake her up. Bright light and all. She went back inside to see if there's anything she could scavenge real fast. First place she checks is, of course, never ever the back area. There's nothing for light to carry. You always want to check the cab first. She got up front, stepping over the corpse of the dead rocket rigger. Up inside there, she saw the usual, some radios. Inside, she saw the black box. All the rocket rigs have black boxes, usually dialed in for a transmission code, so in case they get jumped just outside of the city, the black boxes will give off an emergency transmission. This one hadn't had a chance to get activated, so not much she could do. But she stripped it out. They have a use. These kinds of things have use. She didn't have much time. She ran back to her Chenwick, grabbed her cutting torch, and stripped it out as fast as she could. Then she went through the rest of the compartment, found the usual slug thrower, a couple of blades, a few radios, first aid kit, always valuable. Can't go wrong with medication. In the back, the Panasheba parts were all too big. There's a few chips, that kind of thing, but she didn't have time to sort through the boxes. As it was, turned out she was in there for too long. She came outside carrying one of her satchel bags to throw in the Chenwick. She looked on the rise and she could see one of the Marauder scouts on a bike, just on the skyline. She pulled out her spyglass and threw it down. Her natural vision was pretty strong, but that glass she could see way better than an average person with that spyglass. And there he was, Marauder scout on the rise with a set of binos. She looked behind her and cursed herself because the child was sitting in plain, broad daylight, her long hair blonde, glowing in the sun. Why didn't she just put up a sign? That Marauder was off that bike and just heading back to tell the others. As soon as he was within radio range, maybe they were already in radio range, they'd figure out what had happened. They'd been duped and they were going to be pissed. They were pissed from about six different angles. They'd gotten tricked. This woman had gone and taken their stash. And more than that, she'd claimed the jewel of the whole prize. She'd taken the lion's pick of the whole rig. And the real bad thing about it was she wouldn't be able to make any money. She grabbed the kid as quick as she could, still unconscious, threw her in the back of the Chenwick. She'd had a passenger seat harness made in there in case she did happen to find someone she wanted to help. Hooked onto like what she'd created as a 10-point seat harness. Once strapped in there, that child wouldn't be able to move. Kind of served dual purpose. It could be a passenger, could be a prisoner. It really didn't matter. Once they were strapped in, they're not getting out. So she strapped this girl in, got ready to haul. And haul she did. The problem was, is that this was getting better by the minute. You see, the rocket rig was down, and the marauders were all dead on the ground, and she'd been sighted. But it was a long, long way back to go to the city where this truck came from. So it was too far to go. She wouldn't be able to make it. More than that, it would be far too much of an inconvenience for her. I mean, those marauders would chase her right across the desert. She didn't really want to fancy a running gun battle all the way across the desert, because the marauders would do it. The second problem is that there's both Raker communities all around this location who she was friendly with. There was only one path that was open that headed through trailer trash, and that was heading towards the next city. That was her only bet. If she could get within city limits and get contact with the Panasheva Corp there, they'd come down and pick up this kid. They took that kind of stuff seriously. Not all decency had left. The security, most of the Corp cops were all ex-military, and rescuing children is considered to be a perk in their line of business, especially if they happen to be their children, Panasheva children. Panasheva was rather big on family. They liked the whole concept of keeping their employees happy. So, there was only one way she could go. She had to go through one of the trailer trash hells. Trailer trash hells are where most of these trailer parks built up over time. Eventually, they just got overrun with zombies, wasteland zombies, people, mutants, whatever. I mean, it's a huge garbage dump, dung heap of pain and agony, mutants everywhere. But she knew that those road killers would be on her back. The marauders weren't going to take any prisoners on this one. And if she got caught, or if she led them through any Raker communities, those Raker communities would just get marked, and later on they'd get burned. Way to go. This was getting better by the second. By the time she was ready to move, the first of the marauders were already coming on the hill. The highway stretched on at 12. They were coming in at 2, so she had to leave at 10, but she had to make it look like she was heading for 9. Didn't really work so well. She spun the truck around and started heading back the way she came, and it just went down on the opposite side to where the marauders could see. And the minute she hit the ground off the Plasteel off-road, she spun the Arunimact around and headed back the other way. She was going to head out about the 10, but she had to run parallel with the highway. It was a dangerous game. She had to hope that they weren't catching her on scanner. That Plasteel would block just about anything that was coming in, so they would know. They'd have to guess which way she was going. Anyone of their right mind would run from the marauders in a straight line, quickest way out. But her people were hunters by trade. They knew all about how to deke the predator, how to lead the beast. And she knew everything about the road and the machine. She knew about the technology. She knew what the scanning would be happening. So she deked back. She was going to backtrack and lose them somehow in the mix. With any luck, they'd overshoot and just keep on heading into the desert looking for this mythical ghost. But today was not the day. The ghost named Cludette's luck was just on the verge of running out. She was heading back. She got about, parallel with them when one of the scouts came up on the crest of the hill. They knew they'd be able to get faster speed by not going off-road, by getting on the Plasteel. Happened to look down off to his right, and there he saw the Arunimact. Cludette at the wheel, screaming as fast as that Chenwick would go. The engine revving. All he had to do was just get on that radio. He pulled up the mic, brought it up. She fired a single shot from the 20 mil on the turret. It caught him, but not before he could press the button. They saw the biker get ripped in half. Maybe if no one was watching, she would have been able to get away. But such was not the case. She bought a little bit of time, but not much. Maybe 30 seconds. But that's longer than some children live in this world. She was going hard and fast. She'd gotten about half a mile's distance. Maybe if that. Closing fast before the marauders knew exactly where she was going, and they all turned tail. A huge flanking line descended across the Plasteel, and that's when the gunfire started. Eruptions a whole virtual wall of lead heading towards her at high speed. Death singing towards her from road killers at 1,800 feet per second. It was just amazing how much fire can be thrown out by a pissed off band of pirates. But still, she drove on hard and fast. She took advantage as much as she could of the dead ground, but there's not much in the way of hills. She had to use the natural cover, the sloped hilly regions, what they would call in the military field, the enfiladed fields of fire and the defilated fields of fire. But even still, marauders were coming fast, and their vehicles were not weak. Marauders had been around for a long time in the desert, and they knew exactly what they needed and how to move. Colette had had run-ins with them before. They were no stranger to her techniques and her trades. They knew she was formidable, but they'd been wanting that vehicle of hers and her head on a stick for so long it wasn't even funny. Not to mention anything else they'd do with her body before they happened to cut that head off. This was supposed to be an easy job, just in and out. She had it completely in hand, but then this stupid kid had to show up and screw everything. Damn it. By the time she hit the trash town, she was a lone fox being tailed by a whole horde of hunters and a wide V behind her. Hopefully, trash town would be able to deke them. The mutants had heard them coming, the screaming of their engines and the barking of gunfire. They were ready to meet them. They already started throwing lead out. The Chenwick was armored heavily from the front. She knew exactly how to maneuver, and since she was so low cut, most of the rounds were going over their heads. Mutants' vision wasn't that great. Even though how many eyes they had, it didn't really matter. They were, well, mutants. They had no idea how to shoot. She could outshoot every single person chasing her and the ones ahead, but didn't help her that much right now. She could have sprayed with the 20mm, but she had to conserve that ammo. She knew it was valuable and hard to come by. She could crush it, but she only had so much at any one given point in time. She didn't have really much time to reload. And, after all, finding metal that she can get inside the compressor was hard enough to do anyway. But she had bigger fish to fry at this moment. She had bigger things to worry about. She screamed into trash town, tipping over a trailer as she went. She got air off a dune and slammed her back axles into the tip of the trailer, rolling it like a pop can down the road. It was amazing the carnage that happened after that. Of course, fires began to erupt sporadically. The zombies mostly use open gasoline and waste glass in order to make fires, campfires, barrels, everything. She was doing as much damage as she could. These trash trailers would provide adequate cover. There was mutants running in the way, people trying to get at the car with picks and axes. They were just denting off, and the mutants were bouncing off and over her head. That gun she'd welded down perfectly herself, there's no way that was getting ripped off. She just hoped that nothing got too dirty. Scraping off the blood of these zombies was a hazard enough task, and it was going to be a long time before she'd be able to get her hands on a pressure washer. Taking guts out of your engine is a difficult task, especially when everything's toxic. Moving through trash town, some of the scout bikes had been able to get further ahead of her. They were going to try to cut her off. I don't know what they were thinking, but you have to be kind of crazy to be riding a scout bag for the marauders anyway. They zipped around ahead of her and tried to block off the road. Yeah, good idea. Three bikes trying to block down a Chenwick fast assault vehicle. They used to be called ninja cars in the war. She just drove right over them. She caught one guy on the grill. He was clawing and tearing at the front of that car. Spilled over top. His legs were getting torn on all the wreckage as she drove. Yeah, he'd probably stay on there for a good 3 or 4 seconds, which is a long time to be strapped over the hood of a fast attack vehicle. Before, well, she just happened to hit another barrel, and the fire spilled down on him, and 1 second he was there, next second he was gone. Of course, the other recon bikes were getting behind, the bullets started hitting her vehicle. By this time, the little girl in the back had started screaming. Perfect. Couldn't get much better. The roar of the engine, screaming of a little girl, and bullets singing over her head. This was shaping up to be a very, very good day. There were two bikes in quick pursuit behind her, and she was going to have to get some breathing room if she ever wanted to get away from these guys. Only one thing to do. She slammed on the brakes, and the two bikes rocketed into the rear end of her vehicle. The two guys went sailing over top of the head, screaming the whole time. Screams muffled by the helmet and the roar of gunfire, and of course the mutants would take care of them. One guy hit the ground. He bounced a little bit. He kind of laid still before the mutants dragged him off to the side. Fresh meat for the killing. The other guy just was caught out of the air by a whole crowd of them. She almost felt bad. Almost. But right now, there was no time to feel anything. Right now, she had to take advantage of all the smoke and carnage that had been chewed up by these marauders going through trash town in order to get away. So that's exactly what she did. She knew where the nearest way out of this trash town was, so she made for it. She had to get closer to that city. She had to. She made it outside of the town and realized that there was not the speed happening that she was going to need. There was something wrong, something very, very wrong. Going over the wreckage, something must have come up. Maybe a mutant got caught up in some of her capacitors. Who knows? Maybe some wiring got loose. Anything could have gone wrong, but she was not getting the speed required. That vehicle could do 260 miles an hour on the Plasteel Highway. Off-road, she could sometimes get it up to about 180, 190, and she was going to need every single ounce of horsepower she had if she was going to get away from these marauders. But right now, she'd be lucky if she could get over 100. Hell, a marauder on foot could almost do 100 miles an hour. There's no way she was going to get away. She might be able to stem off, but she had more than 40 miles to go before the next. She was even near the city limits, even near the fringe. No, there was a problem. She wouldn't be able to run. Things were going from bad to even worse. Those marauders would be able to track those where she is, and she'd just follow a swath of destruction. If she just had a little bit more time, but time was something that she just didn't have. She made it 10 more miles before problems started even getting worse. She knew that she was going to have to take a look at what was going on. So, she got close. There, the Plasteel Highway ran over top of a small stream. She got out of the Chenoweth and took a quick look. Yep, just as she guessed, the wiring had become hooked up. She'd have to run almost new wires to 90% of her capacitors. This was a bad, bad scene. She was running out of time, running fast, and she still had over 30 miles to go to get to the fringe. Meanwhile, back with the marauders, the guy running the show, his name was Murdoch. A really crazy bald bugger who really didn't care about anything or anyone. He was running over everything in his path. His particular vehicle was he taking some rocket ring engines and put it on some kind of a bastardized racing frame. Customized, of course, for any and all possible Baja off-road slaughterhouse effects. He had two guys on the back that he put in his own personal crush cannons, and his vehicle would be an easy, easy match for the Arunamacht. He knew what he was up against, and he wanted Kulat's head on a stick. He had to have her. He had to get her, and these trash zombies were just in the way. He got constant radio reports from the rogue teams, and everybody answered to Murdoch without a problem. They all knew that he was crazier than anyone else, so he was the one in charge. The marauders always got the kill. Somebody was going to die. Whether Murdoch killed one of his own or they all got their hands on Kulat, it really didn't matter, but someone was dying. He knew that today for sure. These zombies didn't count. They were killing them wholesale. They made their way through the smoke and the debris. It wasn't long before the scouts picked up on the distinctive tracks of the Chenoweth. Yeah, she had a fast car, and yeah, she knew how to drive, but those tracks were real distinctive. He'd be able to tell. Those zombies got any wheels anyway, so it was just a matter of time. He'd come up and crest of the hill to see the Chenoweth. Oh, look, it was having technical problems. Things are going bad. She was just getting back in the vehicle. She had nowhere to go. She didn't have enough time to fix it, that was for sure. So what did she do? Well, looked like she was up for a glory run. If she wanted to have a wonderful game of chicken, he'd be the guy to oblige her. She jumped back in the vehicle and started shotgunning towards him as fast as she could. The engine was screaming. Of course, all he did was kick on the extra nitrous so that his engine screamed too, and it was going to be head-on to head-on. All the other marauders fanned out on either side. Either way, they won. Either Murdoch was going to die, and somebody else was going to be in charge, which meant a promotion for all involved, or, well, Kulat was going down. He didn't want to destroy her car, and she knew that, but he had to make her give. He had to make her spin off to the side. And she did. She turned last minute, deking as hard as she could. She could not believe how maneuverable that car was. He tried to think about how wonderful it would be if he could put a man in that cockpit, because he knew that he could outperform her any day of the week. She zipped by him and happened to take out yet another scout, newbie, on one of the bikes. Didn't matter. The rest of the squad was ready for it, and they began to give chase once again. But she wasn't far enough ahead. They'd had mag harpoons ready to go. Usually use mag harpoons to lock onto the rocket rigs to slow them down. Yeah, they can push through a lot, but they can't pull much. It kind of decreases their general speed when you hook them up to a couple tons of trash in a mag lock. Her vehicle was damaged. There's no way that she should be moving as slowly as she was. So now, it was all about enjoying it. He took about 4 minutes to line up a perfect mag harpoon shot right onto the back of that stupid little buggy of hers and nailed it tight. From the truck, he just slammed on the brakes, and the Chenoweth, although it was quick, didn't have the pulling power. Yeah, it slowed right down. The rest of them came up and threw threw the magnets over top, scrambling all of her electrical frequencies inside, and it was over. She was caught. They were all pulled in tight, making a nice big circular ring all the way around the downed car. The Arunamacht was finally caught. They finally got their hands on Kulat, and there was not a thing she could do about it. She was already half out of the vehicle. The boys were having a bit of fun with her, slapping her around. Kicked her a few times, punched her a few times. As long as there was no steel involved, if anyone was going to cut her, it was going to be him. He was going to have his fun, and then he'd throw her body out to the wolves. Today was a good day. They'd gotten a new car for his personal pleasure. They'd gotten him a new woman for his personal pleasure. And they managed to get the Jewel, a perfect blonde child that... Where was the blonde child? They were clawing through that vehicle and there was no child inside. Did he ditch that child? And did she dump the body of that child off somewhere in the desert so he wouldn't get it? That's just spiteful. That was just wrong. She was still getting slapped around. There's obviously no child to be seen. He came walking over and wrapped his massive hand around her neck and lifted her up. She looked at him defiantly, spit a little bit. One of her teeth caught him in the eye. Didn't make much difference to him. He shook her little mongoloid face and said, "Where is the child?" And then something hit him. He got tackled to the side. He was down on the ground. He didn't know what had happened. He got to lift himself up, and then he realized, well, he didn't have a torso from the nipples down. And then he died. Kulat pulled herself up. The pain from her face and her missing teeth was going to be a problem, but she'd been given some time. A Panashima gunship chopper. Two skiffs on either side with high-powered snipers on both, pumping rounds downrange. That wonderful friend of hers, Murdoch, who she just met, seemed to be torn in half, and everybody else was getting shot, too. The gunship had just started cutting loose with the rockets. She didn't have much time. The Marauders had already done most of the work for her, tearing the nets off the side. All she had to do was peel that stupid mag harpoon off the back of her car, and she'd be able to put some mileage on goal. Wasn't much mileage, but a little bit of movement was better. Anything better than running was good enough for her right now. She peeled the mag harpoon off as the gunfire was ripping all around, but the Marauders didn't care. They were trying to scatter for their own lives. 20mm cannons will make a hell of a mess of a man on a bike, not to mention the explosive frags and all the other joys they'd had happening. It seemed that her plan had worked. She dropped the child by the water and put the black box up. The black box would call in everything out. It was no good from where she was that far out, but she'd gotten close enough. Activating that black box, sitting down by the child, soldiers would respond to the rig. Once they realized it was a child, didn't take long to put two and two together. The kid was screaming and crying, told them what had happened. So Panashima itself wouldn't care. Panashima's policy would have been just take the child to go home. But there was a soldier in the cockpit. That soldier knew what was happening. Someone had run interference and brought this child home. Panashima, well, at least the soldiers owed somebody a favor. So, if nothing else, last they could do, the very least they could do, is cap off a few rounds and get rid of the Marauders who jacked the rig in the first place. Kulat didn't know that, though, and she wasn't taking any chances. As soon as she could, she wiped the blood from her eyes and slammed that pedal down, getting that Chenwick out of there. She was driving hard and fast, made it up into the Plasteel. It would go faster on the Plasteel rather than anywhere else. The radar was all scrambled and everything was gone. She hoped a rocket rig wasn't coming the other way. But slowly, with the fire and the burning and the rockets fading behind her, she realized that she must have been let go. If that hadn't been the cemented home, just as she was getting away, that gunship came flying overhead and spun around some 500 feet ahead of her, looking right down the barrels at the twin snipers and at all the rockets and the guns on the gunship. All it would have taken was a finger twitch, and she'd have been history. But instead, Chopper bowed slightly, and then headed straight back for the city. Seems like she'd made a friend in Panashima. She made a friend by saving a child. The child's name, incidentally, was Gloria. She was just a kid who decided she wanted to see the world, so she jumped a rocket rig. Bad move. Almost cost her life. Cost Kulat a few teeth. She came out of it okay. As the chopper went back in, she drove off into the sunset, and that was it. She's still running around out here somewhere. Kulat. Never met her. I think I seen her car once. The Arunamacht. She always, you know, this stories get told to me, and I pass them on to you. But they give me hope. They give me hope that at least there's a few decent people left out there. I hope you can pass these stories on. I hope you can let people know about what's to come. That's just one story of, you know, one hero, but there's a whole lot of innocent people that died. There's no happy stories 90% of the time. Most of the time, well, the road killers win. The marauders were taken out that day. There is no marauder gang anymore. They're people who took up the name, fight amongst themselves, but there's other gangs that rise. Banshees and all the rest. It's a hell of a world out here. I'm going to wait a couple more hours and catch some sleep. By the wreckage, I should be fine. I'm going to hit one of the Raker communities and try to get resupplied. I guess that's about it for now. Hope you guys are receiving this. I hope I'm getting through. This is Independent Librarian Dynamics, Sean Kennedy VI. I hope you listen to what I got to say, because although these stories may be exciting, it's a bleak world that I'm calling from. I'm broadcasting from the wreckage alongside of the Autobahn, somewhere deep in the wastelands. Please, let other people know about the coming storm. Please help me.